Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an extra episode of Paranormal Stories. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the Skoll experiment. In the history of modern psychical research, there are cases that linger as curiosities, others that fade into obscurity, and a select few that become points of sustained fascination. Among the latter belongs the Skoll experiment, a series of seances conducted in the English village of Skoll, Norfolk, between 1993 and 1998. For more than 5 years, a dedicated circle of mediums and investigators gathered in a cellar beneath a private home, documenting phenomena that seemed to blur the boundary between the living and the dead. Lights darted through the darkness. Voices spoke from empty air. Objects appeared without explanation. Sealed rolls of photographic film produced images no camera had taken. And materialized hands reached out to clasp those of astonished witnesses. What distinguished Skoll from the long tradition of spiritualist seances was not only the sheer variety of occurrences, but also the seriousness with which they were observed. The Society for Psychical Research, founded in 1882 to bring scientific scrutiny to claims of the paranormal, devoted years to investigating Skoll, culminating in a 300-page report that remains one of the most detailed case studies of physical mediumship in modern times. The origins of the experiment were modest. Robin and Sandra Foy, committed spiritualists with decades of experience, settled in Skoll with the idea of establishing a circle for experimental work. They were joined by Alan and Diana Bennett, both sensitive to what they believed were psychic influences. The group chose the cellar beneath the Foy home as their seance room, not for its romance, but for its practicality, a dark, enclosed space that could be searched before and after sittings, with few opportunities for external interference. The cellar was bare, furnished with simple chairs and a table, its stone walls lending an austere atmosphere. In this unadorned setting, they began their weekly gatherings. From the start, the group emphasized harmony and trust. Sessions began with music, prayer, and relaxation, creating an atmosphere conducive, they believed, to communication with non-physical intelligences. Early on, small lights began to appear in the room. Witnesses described pinpoints of brilliance, brighter than sparks, flitting across the darkness. Sometimes they hovered before a sitter's face, as if observing. At other times they danced in patterns that seemed responsive to spoken requests. The lights were not random. On one occasion, a glowing sphere circled a sitter's head before diving into a crystal on the table, which immediately glowed from within. On another evening, multiple lights performed a kind of aerial ballet, spiralling around each other before merging into a single radiant form. The SBR investigators later remarked that the movement suggested deliberate control by an external intelligence, a conclusion that, while cautious, indicated that the lights could not be dismissed as mere optical illusion. As weeks turned to months, the range of phenomena expanded. Voices began to emerge in the air, distinct from the speech of the mediums. These were not whispers or half-heard murmurs, but full, resonant voices that carried across the room, addressing sitters by name, commenting on their appearance, or offering advice. The communicators introduced themselves collectively as the Skoll Spirit Team. They claimed to be working with the human circle to demonstrate the continuity of consciousness beyond death. Some identified themselves as having lived earthly lives. One, for example, gave the name of a physician who said he practiced in London in the early 20th century. Others described themselves as technicians, responsible for producing the phenomena. Whatever their identities, their voices had an acoustic quality difficult to locate, sometimes seeming to come from the centre of the room, sometimes from just beside a sitter's ear. On more than one occasion, two voices spoke simultaneously, conversing with each other while all four human mediums remained silent. The SBR investigators noted that such events argued strongly against ventriloquism. The communications were often practical. The voices would ask for adjustments to seating or lighting, or instruct the group on how best to conduct the photographic experiments that became the hallmark of the sessions. At other times, they offered philosophical reflections. One evening, a communicator spoke at length about the nature of creativity as a force that bridges the physical and spiritual dimensions. Another reassured a nervous visitor that fear was unnecessary, declaring, "We wish only to show that life continues, that love is never broken." Such remarks left many sitters deeply moved. Accounts of visitors often described tears, not from fear, but from the sense of contact with something profoundly reassuring. Alongside lights and voices came the appearance of physical objects, known in the spiritualist tradition as apports. These objects seemed to materialize from nowhere. Coins appeared on the table, some of apparent antiquity, their surfaces worn with age. Gemstones and crystals materialized in sitters' hands or laps, sometimes still faintly luminous, as if carrying residual energy. Sheets of parchment inscribed with symbols were discovered after sessions, their texture consistent with vellum, and the writing unfamiliar to any present. On one memorable evening, a small glass sphere manifested in the center of the table, glowing faintly before being passed from hand to hand. Investigators recorded these events carefully, noting that the room had been searched before the sitting and that the appearance of such objects defied ordinary explanation. Even more astonishing were reports of materialized limbs. Sitters described the sensation of warm, human hands grasping their own, only to dissolve moments later. Others saw faintly luminous outlines of hands or arms reaching out in the darkness. A German physicist reported feeling his tie tugged playfully, then glimpsed a childlike glowing hand that vanished before his eyes. Such tactile encounters carried enormous weight for those who experienced them. Whereas lights and voices might be dismissed as visual or auditory illusions, the feeling of a hand, warm, textured, and strong, was far harder to set aside. Perhaps the most celebrated aspect of the Skoll experiment, however, was the work with sealed photographic film. The procedure was simple in concept, but ingenious in practice. Rolls of unexposed 35mm film were placed in opaque containers, sometimes locked, and often kept under the continuous supervision of an investigator throughout a sitting. Afterward, the film was developed and revealed images that no camera had taken. These ranged from intricate geometric designs to portraits of human faces, from landscapes in color to written messages in multiple languages. One film displayed a mandala of astonishing complexity, with interlaced patterns symmetrical across several frames. Another showed a face resembling a Victorian gentleman, complete with detailed features and clothing. Yet another carried a message in German, encouraging visiting scientists to persevere in their efforts. Still others bore writing in Latin or scripts that have not been identified. What made these experiments particularly persuasive to observers was the level of control. On several occasions, visiting researchers purchased the film themselves, sealed it in containers, and kept it in their possession throughout the session, even placing the box beneath their own hands during the séance. Despite such precautions, images still appeared when the film was developed. Some of the most puzzling anomalies involved the production of color images on monochrome film stock. One series of negatives showed landscapes with green trees and blue skies, though the film supplied had been verified as black and white. Experts in photographic chemistry, consulted by the investigators, noted that the effects could not be explained by ordinary exposure or processing errors. Reactions to the photographs were varied but often profound. One sitter unrolled a developed film to find the likeness of his deceased father, rendered in a style that was not conventionally photographic, yet carried unmistakable resemblance. The man was overcome with emotion, interpreting the image as a direct sign of survival. Others saw in the images symbolic content, abstract designs that seemed to embody messages about unity, continuity, and the interweaving of dimensions. For the SPR investigators, the photographs were among the most difficult phenomena to dismiss, since the controls were so stringent and the results so striking. The weight of the Skoll experiment was increased by the caliber of the witnesses. Over 5 years, more than 100 people attended sessions, including scientists, engineers, psychologists, and journalists. Among them were Montague Keane, an agricultural consultant and veteran SPR member, Professor Arthur Ellison, an electrical engineer, and Dr. David Fontana, a psychologist. Each brought a professional background of observation and analysis. Ellison wrote that he was particularly impressed by the luminous displays, which he found to behave as though under intelligent direction. Fontana emphasized the photographic experiments, regarding them as especially resistant to conventional explanation. Keane, who attended many sittings, declared that the cumulative evidence was consistent with the survival hypothesis, suggesting that consciousness does indeed persist beyond death. International visitors also participated. German physicists brought their own film stock and reported images appearing under their supervision. American parapsychologists travelled to Skoll and left convinced that they had witnessed genuine anomalies. Journalists from mainstream publications attended and wrote accounts describing their astonishment. Even when visitors refrained from drawing definitive conclusions about survival, they often acknowledged that they had seen something extraordinary, something that challenged their assumptions about what was possible. Accounts of the atmosphere of the sitters are revealing. Participants consistently emphasized a sense of warmth, harmony, and energy in the cellar. Music was played to encourage a relaxed state, and phenomena often seemed to move in rhythm with melodies. On several occasions, voices joined in the singing, producing harmonies beyond the capacity of the four human mediums. The SPR report noted that manifestations were most abundant when rapport among sitters was strong and diminished when tensions or doubts arose. This suggested that the phenomena depended not only on the abilities of the mediums, but also on the collective atmosphere of the group. As the years passed, the phenomena became increasingly elaborate, but by 1998 the experiment drew to a close. The mediums reported that their spirit collaborators had warned of potential dangers in continuing, suggesting that negative forces might intrude if the work were pressed further. Out of respect for these warnings, the group ended their sessions. Soon afterward, the Society for Psychical Research published its monumental report. Its conclusion was cautious but significant. The phenomena could not be wholly explained by conventional means, and they presented a challenge to science to expand its boundaries. In the decades since, the Skoll experiment has remained a touchstone in discussions of the paranormal. Robin Foy, until his death in 2022, continued to advocate for the significance of the work, describing the Skoll sittings as a bridge between worlds. Accounts of the experiment continue to circulate in books, documentaries, and lectures, ensuring its place in the history of psychical research. So what are we to make of this remarkable case? The Skoll experiment does not leave us with certainty, and perhaps that is its most enduring feature. It leaves us instead with wonder, with the sense that our understanding of reality may be incomplete. To sit in darkness and watch lights dance, to hear voices without bodies, to hold a hand that dissolves into the air, to develop film that carries a message from no known source. These experiences divide the ordinary categories of science. For those who witness them, they remain unforgettable. For historians of psychical research, Skoll stands alongside the great seance traditions of the 19th century, updated for a modern audience and scrutinized with modern eyes. Its legacy is not proof, but possibility. It leaves us poised between skepticism and belief, between explanation and mystery, between the known and the yet to be discovered. And perhaps it is in that liminal space that human curiosity thrives best. The Skoll experiment, whatever else it may be, is a testament to the enduring human desire to seek beyond the visible, to listen in the dark for voices that remind us that life, in some form, goes on. Today I was talking about the Skoll experiment. And just to remind you, my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out now on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, Kindle, or audiobook. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.